Welcome to Be Customer Led, where we'll explore how leading experts in customer and employee experience are navigating organizations through their own journey to be customer led and the actions and behaviors employees and businesses exhibit to get there. And now, your host, Bill Stakos.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Be Customer Led. I've got a really interesting guest with us this week. Liam DeLapp works for a company called Pipestream, which is a conversational AI organization, tech company, and they're doing some pretty cool stuff. And we'll get into that in a little bit later in the show. Liam's been working with customers for a long, long time. He heads up enterprise sales there today. Just an all-around just amazing guy. Serious thought leader in this space, director of enterprise sales, excuse me. And Liam, welcome to the show. It's great to have you on.
Thanks so much, Bill. Looking forward to being here.
Yeah, it's going to be a good conversation. All right. So let's talk about just your journey first, you know, how you grew up in this space, what led you to where you are today?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think like the original bug that I got, I mean, the thing is, you know, being, you know, whatever, an expert in this space, I'm also a customer just like everyone else. So yeah. I think I was probably in college and I had to call Comcast. Sorry to call out anyone here, but they've come miles since then. But I think I was on the phone with a cable company that, you know, I was trying to transfer service from one place to another, and I couldn't believe how difficult it was. I mean, I think it took me 3 hours and multiple calls. And that wasn't like the moment I was like, oh, now I'm going to spend the rest of my life in conversational technology. But it definitely stuck with me as I went into the working world and continued, you know, to, you know, deal with more responsibility and more bills and interface with more and more companies. And the consistent theme was the difficulty. You know, this is like 15 years ago, but the difficulty of just getting simple tasks done was something that I, you know, and I'm sure everyone has one of those friends or even like someone's family member that is that person who just goes ballistic on the calls. And that wasn't me. I wasn't mean or anything. I was just like, how is this possible? I would even empathize with call center agents, be like,
sure.
They're like, I know, right? It shouldn't be this hard. Yeah. So, you know,
they know it's broken. They get those calls all the time, right?
Right. So. Oh, trust me. We'll cover that one too. But so I started my career in consulting, and then, you know, I was looking at businesses through this lens, and I was like, there's got to be an opportunity here. And of course, this is already happening with Cisco and even, you know, Siebel implementations and IBM AS/400 implementations and stuff. And so I actually, you know, looked to get involved about 6 or 7 years ago. And I've been in the space of conversational AI since, kind of with that personal anecdote of trying to make it more effortless and easier for customers to transact and do business, you know, and not make it hard. I mean, and we've seen all these digital first businesses do the same thing. And, you know, really win a lot of market share doing it. So, you know, it's been really rewarding. And every year that goes by, it's incredible to see how the technology improves and continues to make that experience even better.
So let's talk a little bit about that, right? Because chatbots have been around a long time. Some of them, you know, like some of them were just not dumb chatbots, right? I mean, even, you know, several years ago, still sophisticated for its time in some way. That has really evolved much, in a really significant way over the last couple of years, for sure. You know, tell me a little bit about how, you know, conversational AI has evolved. And, you know, for you specifically being in this space, like what has wowed you about it?
Yeah. So, you know, I've done my research here. You know, in 1966, I think the first chatbot was created at MIT.
Yeah.
And it was just a rule-based engine. So if this, then that, right? Pretty straightforward stuff. Yeah. But despite it being around in 1966, you know, you and I both know probably the first time you ever used a chatbot was within the last 10 years. So there was a huge amount of time that had to happen for the technology to get good enough to put in front of customers and for customer experience leaders like yourself, Bill, to, you know, feel comfortable using and using as a first line of defense for issue resolution and even sales. And then, you know, in the 80s and 90s, there was the growth of like IVRs and intelligent voice recognition and you know, DTMF, like press one for this, press two for that. Yeah. And I think pretty much every adult, like regardless of age, thinks of most poor experiences with that in mind. Press one for billing, press two for this. A menu options have changed, right?
Yeah.
Because I think we all grew up with that. And it's such a part of our, almost like our culture and our expectation in working with business, that that's kind of how we think about call centers and customer service. But as you know, as well as I, in the last 5 to 6 years, like the entire dynamic of customer experience has shifted. It's now a C-suite position, the customer, chief customer officer, chief customer experience officer. You know, that transition has come out of the fact that people win business, businesses win customers by making it easy as possible to do business. The customers are going to choose the path of least resistance. And so if you can enable that and create a journey that does that both with employee experience optimization and technology optimization, you know, that's really where the evolution is going to continue to go. And so, you know, within the last 10 years or so, and I think as a function of digital and smartphones becoming kind of an extension of our bodies, people now prefer to message. That's how you communicate with your kids. It's how you communicate with your family. And so it's a channel
that is,
I mean, it's a channel that's there and it's what people expect now. And so the chat channels have grown, you know, even in the last 3 years, significantly, just based on the volume of business that we're doing. And also just what I've heard from a lot of the clients. We have customers that used to be 100% phone call, now down to 50%, some of them 100% chat. And I think the reason for that, as someone who's been both on the phone automation and now kind of chat and messaging automation side of things, is it's a much more visually friendly experience, right? A phone call is great. It's hands-free, but there isn't visual components to it. You can't look at a video or an infographic that can be accessed, you know, and that is, that's limiting. You know, you're effectively only using your auditory when you're on the phone, non-visual. And, you know, companies like Uber and Amazon know this, right? And they make it so easy to hit a button and buy something or hit a button and get a car. That now that's the expectation that's been set. And people to even wait, just to even hear the 5 seconds of dial tone is like, you've lost their interest by that point. It's sad, but it's true because that's the expectation that's been set. And I think that's going to only continue to grow in the future.
And if you're angry to begin with, because you're trying to call in or whatever, right? Or like, okay, here's another option. I might be unhappy with that product or the service provider, et cetera, it really does change the experience for you. It disarms you a little bit because it's a very different and unique experience versus, you know, the next available agent is 25 minutes from now versus like, okay, I need training or I need help with this. And I'm going to get that video right here.
Right.
As an example. So, you know, I talked to a lot of, you know, contact center leaders, across a lot of different industries. There are a lot of people that are really concerned. If you're in a contact center and you see this technology coming, you're concerned for your role, right? It's a great way to certainly create efficiency in your organization. It's a great way to extend that experience and that brand in a different way. It doesn't mean that you get to let go your entire contact center, though some companies may look to do that, but it does enhance sort of the way that customers interact with you. And even if they want to go to someone live, you can do that right off the platform too, which is important.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about, you know, that view and how, and some of the benefits from a customer engagement and loyalty perspective, right? Because I want to still be able to talk to a live body if I need to. I want to be able to not have to go through that route and wait 20 minutes if I don't need to. So what are some of the benefits you're seeing from a customer engagement and loyalty perspective?
Great question. And honestly, I echo that and I couldn't agree more. You know, Shep Hyken talks about these moments of wow and magic. And that's exactly, you know, putting this into my perspective, like as someone who's a customer as well, my moments of wow have come from human to human conversation. Simply because I think we all take for granted how amazing technology is. So when technology is always supposed to work, and if it doesn't, we're upset. If it does, then no one's really like celebrating that, even though they probably should, if you think about how amazing it is. So I agree. I mean, every business is different. Everyone is going to have specific use cases that really are better suited for the customer to be automated versus others that are better suited for a human and an employee to handle. That's really the litmus test. It's not about like, it's not a personal or even really a business discussion. It's a function of what do our customers want? If our customers want to make payments online or want to, you know, set scheduling appointments online and they'd rather do that than over the phone, then you should make that available for them and to let them do that as easy as possible. But you should also on the same turn, let them call in and do that as well. Mm-hmm. Giving them the power to do that is certainly one part of answering that question. I think the other part of that is, it's not really, I don't think anyone should look at conversational AI investment as a cost reduction strategy in isolation. If you're only looking at it from that lens, you're right. I think you're making a mistake, because yeah, it should really just be about the other benefits, the customer experience improvement, like mapping what your voice of the customer is asking for and providing it to them, even driving revenue growth. And most importantly, and at the end of the day, enabling your employees, improving the employee experience. When I say employees, I mean contact center agents. Sure. Making them better and smarter and more efficient at their job is going to make them feel more fulfilled. It's going to drive efficiency for you as a business, and it's going to improve the customer experience. So, I mean, it's really all part of this, the fourth industrial revolution, if you think of it that way. Yeah. Like, this is just the new normal, like the way that we're working with and partnering with computers and AI and technology to be better at our jobs. You know, it's so easy to explain that in the call center side, because everyone can understand that. It's happening in every business line across your organization, but in the CX space, there's so much opportunity for that. I mean, think about how much data companies have on consumers. Yeah, and then think about how little that data is used. Like, you know, I mean, if you could have a million pieces of data on me, Liam, but if you don't have the analytics and the intelligence to query that information and make it, you know, actionable for a human, then it's useless. And so AI can query that and say, hey, you know, based on Liam's tweet yesterday, he's upset. Maybe we should talk with a different tone. I mean, all these things are a little bit still future focused. Some folks are doing them, but that's where we're going to go. And, you know, who wouldn't want to be treated in a personalized manner, especially if they're willing to expose their data. Now, you know, in the EU, they're going to deal with some challenges with GDPR. Sure. But I think that's, you know, kind of where we're at now.
Liam, how far? So you just brought up I've got a bunch of questions right now kind of rolling through my head. It's the way that my brain works. I want to talk about sort of the future and where this is going, particularly around how that conversational AI changes tone, type of information maybe, and how it engages you even, and how far off from that we are. Because it feels like we've got the technology today. It's more about maybe what are the right spots to go implement it. But just on the terms of from the point you made around use cases specifically, one, I think that I don't see it as much on the employee experience side, but I think there's huge opportunity there for sure, particularly when you're looking at things like benefits or healthcare or yes, you know, just things like that. I don't have to call, you know, my HR 800 right number, right? As an example. Right. But even on those use cases, like from a consumer perspective, it's totally clear to me, right? On the B2B side, are you seeing a lot of growth there, or is that where the growth is starting to happen more and more? I'm just curious to hear your perspective.
Yeah, I saw something on LinkedIn today that was pretty cool. It was, you know, we're all call center agents just with different titles. Like, we're all replying to emails for clients, right? Right. Like in sales and in support. But it's just, you know, it's kind of true if you think about it, right?
Different comp bands, yeah.
Yeah, different, you know, different, like maybe a more expensive product, you know, but it's true. And so, you know, to that effect, I think the B2B side is growing. We have done deployments and implementations for it. Yeah. But the way that we look at it is like, is it a repetitive task? Is it something that, you know, is simply as like pulling data from one place and projecting it to a user? Mm-hmm. When it comes to anything that requires like empathy or persuasion, I think we're still pretty far away from that. And I think, I think that's always going to be something we should do. I think we don't want to get to like a creepy robotic society, right? I mean, that's, you know, Elon Musk might disagree with me, but, but that's where we're seeing it. So an example, you know, again, it's really those low hanging fruits. So we have company A doing business with company B. They're a big, you know, let's call them a toilet paper distributor. And they have this contract where they're supposed to provide them, you know, 20,000 rolls of toilet paper every month. Well, let's say the finance folk person on company B wants to ask company A, hey, you know, what was our last month's invoice? Can we update our order? Those are things that are really transactional in nature. And likely the user at company B would just like a simple, easy, instant way to do that on their own time, 24/7. We've done that type of automation for that B2B function. But as it relates to like sales of B2B, mm-hmm, you know, I think I think that still rests in the hands of humans still. But as it relates to like ongoing business and support and even like invoicing and finance, there are some low hanging fruit that we've begun to address with some companies, both internally and externally.
Very cool.
Yeah.
So COVID, you know, hopefully we're done with it this year. Fingers crossed. That's right. I feel like there's this, like this rehumanization of just society generally. Mm-hmm. Do you think that there's going to be a backlash on technology like this? Or is it because, again, let's look at like digital shopping trends are like off the charts, right? People are using their phones and their computers and laptops like never before. But from a service perspective or an education perspective or a problem resolution perspective, do you think that there's going to be some backlash and people want to talk to humans again because they're on the phone? Or do you think that the value proposition for consumers is just too great that, and because you're already increasing the digital sort of habits of consumers, that we're just naturally just going to kind of hit you know, the speed button on this?
I think and would bet it's the latter. And really it's not about like the something that an old mentor used to say to me was, you know, humans are inherently lazy. And it's kind of true. And to that effect, I'm going to go back to what I said earlier, which is customers are going to pick the path of least resistance and whatever's the most effortless. So if ordering online with Amazon is more effortless than going to the shop, you know, that obviously is going to happen. Yep. From a support side, the same is true. If checking my status of an order is clicking a button versus calling, I'm going to click the button. I mean, that's just not going anywhere. I don't see a world where people are going to say, you know what, like, I feel like we should rehumanize and not click that button. I'm going to call. Like, I don't see that happening. And it makes sense. I mean, again, it's path of least resistance. Yep. People want what's easy. People want what's instant.
Yeah.
Again, the fourth industrial revolution, this is us just another step towards us just being more in sync and in synergy with technology. And I think because it's such a part of our life now, we don't even think about it. Like a lot of people on different conversations I've had with other podcasts come to me like, I never even thought about the complexity of what happens when I make a phone call and realize the systems that these agents are overseeing and the CRMs and all these things, right? People take it for granted. If it works, then they just continue living their life. If it doesn't work, then they'll give you a 1-star review. There's no chance for someone to just say, hey, Uber worked today, 5 stars, even though it should, because it's such an incredible experience, right? Yeah. Like if you think about the technology that drives that, everyone's taking that for granted. So, you know, I think, again, I bet you there'll be a few companies that come out of the woodwork and lead with human first and don't lean on much automation. And they will probably win some market share with that because there's going to be a certain, you know, part of the market that wants that experience. But I think overall, you know, even behind the scenes, those folks who are having that conversation, they're going to be using AI internally to make the employees smarter and more efficient. So it's going to be there. It just might be in a different mouthpiece or a different front end. That front end might be human. That front end might be digital. That front end might be both. And I think it's going to only increase to be digitally year over year as the technology gets smarter and more data can be accessed via APIs and those become more available at a lot of companies as well.
So I agree with you. I think that just the increase in sort of the digital landscape and how digital just as a medium has increased exponentially over the last 12 months, I think that is going to just be much more way forward for better or worse, right? But still, I think that there's a lot of value to be gained, not only as consumers, but also as businesses.
Yeah.
All right, let's fast forward the clock on this technology. 5 years, 10 years. You talked a little bit about, so I think a lot about this stuff, unfortunately. It probably drives my family crazy, but it does. I mean, it's just the truth. And I love how we're going just like a little bit more empathetic. And we're seeing that today, right? In some of those conversational, like the AIs that are out there already. Are you seeing where, you know, I go complain on Twitter as an example, or I'm out on Instagram and I take a little video, this is a terrible experience, whatever. Do you think that there's going to be just not only more empathetic and more understanding of what your needs are and maybe even just resolving those needs, but is that outbound messaging going to happen to me? Will I get that tweet back saying, hey, kind of click on this link, call in and let's have that conversation about how to resolve your issue?
So the answer to that question is it's definitely possible and can be done today.
Yeah.
I don't know anyone that's doing it. I mean, we could even feasibly do it. I think it's really, that's going to be like another cultural progression in my opinion.
Yeah.
Which is, and the question of that cultural progression is how cool am I with letting this company use this data, this personal data of mine, against me or for, I mean, I wouldn't even use the word against me, but yeah. for me, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think right now people would probably be a little bit, it might be off-putting, frankly, culturally. Some people might enjoy it. I think I'd love it. Cause I, you know, I probably should care more about my personal data, but I don't. There's Alexa's, oh, sure, I should have said that in every room, in every room of the house.
It's going on behind me, by the way, anyway.
Yeah, yeah, I'm sure it is. It's going to play like some Beatles music, but anyway, you know, I think that we're going to have to really crawl, walk, run that type yeah. of stuff. I mean, look at what Europe's doing. Like they're going the exact opposite direction and, totally. And I applaud them for it. Like I'm impartial, frankly. You know, but they're giving the people the power to decide, do you want me to use this and make this custom for you or do you not? Yeah. And I think there's a lot of good in that. And so for, let's just keep this answer to the function of people who do want it.
Yeah.
For those people, the art of the possible is honestly endless. Like in the next 5 years, let alone five, maybe 3 years, those things could be very common. Like proactive outreach to me after I've left a bad Yelp review yep. with a coupon to retry and maybe redo my review. And then changing the actual greeting of that message based on how angry I was. Maybe like if it's 2-star, it will be this message. If it's 1-star, it will be this message. Yep. And even further, like sentiment analysis on the open text
yep.
of those reviews and how that maybe like quoting one of those things so it feels personalized, right? Yep. All those things can happen. I just think whether or not they happen is a function of what the people want. Again, it always goes back to what customers want.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I think it'd be cool to pilot that out and see what reactions folks get. And honestly, I don't know. What do you think? Like, do you think that we're going to continue to use people's data you know, in the market and in market analytics, or are we going to actually kind of go the angle of EU and make it more limited? What do you think?
So I'm like you. I don't care what you do with my data as long as it's secure.
Yeah.
Full stop. Like, here's more. If you can improve my life, literally improve right. my life, and that's what I mean. Like, when I think about data security versus sort of what you're doing with and what you know about me, what you're doing with it, like a Google or you know Amazon, etc. It's more about like how are you enriching me.
Yeah.
By using that. And if you're not enriching my life through that product or service, then I want to be able to dial that back.
Yes.
Right. So I think as we progress in the future, I think companies will have to think about, all right, data security is like table stakes. Like we can't mess with people's data, obviously. And as you get to quantum computing, that'll be hopefully a little bit more easy.
Yeah.
But the whole point of that customization of the experience and how, you know, whether it's this mic, the laptop, you know, whatever that is, you know, my phone, how are you enriching my life, de-stressing it, taking friction out of it, and using my personal data to be able to do that? If a product can do that, here you go. What do you want to know? You want to know, like, you want me to give you a pay stub? Here it is, right? Like,
I fully agree. And I think what will happen is folks like us will be the early adopters of that technology. Like,
yeah.
you know, we'll probably click some button that we don't read that says, you know, you're opting into this experience and like, kind of like the Apple update checkboxes
yeah.
that are, yeah, I'm going to read this 100-page article anyway. So we'll probably be the first to do that. And what will happen, I think what will happen is if that's the case, we're going to be served these incredible experiences and we're going to be like really wowed by them. And then we'll be at a party or a dinner and we'll show people this experience. And then they might shift to our way of thinking. They might say, you know what? Maybe I shouldn't be so, like, this is really improving Liam and Bill's life so much. Maybe I should be a little bit more open. They've sold me on the fact that my data is secure. Maybe I should shift. And through word of mouth and kind of sharing experiences, it might just become the new normal. And I think that's a very likely outcome.
Yeah.
Especially if the experiences that are going to be delivered with the technology and your data are outstanding, which is the intent. And then from there, it will get pretty wild. I mean, honestly, like it kind of hurts my brain to think about it. And there's no limit to what can happen at that point because anything is possible. Any outbound communication is possible. The technology to understand human sentiment and human language is already there.
Yeah.
And the ability to contextualize that and use specific data on me I mean, I wish I could like speak about it. I mean, maybe in like 5 minutes I can come back to it, but
no, like,
it's unlimited scale. So you would have unlimited scale of, imagine you had 10,000 employees dedicated to doing everything they possibly can with all the data that Bill has. That's what could happen to every customer with technology.
Yeah.
That's kind of the scale of it.
I'm waiting for, so I interviewed Brett King a couple of weeks back. It's not published yet, but he's a futurist in the financial services space. Super interesting guy. And we were just talking about the future of banking. I was like, and now I knew this show was coming up, and I'm like just preparing for it my own way, doing my discovery, et cetera. And I'm like, I can't wait for the day that I walk into the car dealer, or maybe, or I'm on Carvana, let's say, because why would you go to a car dealer anymore?
Right.
and I'm shopping for cars, and I've got my wearable, right? And that little voice comes through and says, Bill, you can actually afford these upgrades. Right. And by the way, you're already pre-approved for the loan. It's already done. Like my bank knows how much goes in, you know, through direct deposit. They know how much house I can afford. They know how much car I can afford, et cetera. So being able to do that and be like, okay, but be able to talk back and say, well, how do I stretch that a little bit further? Like, I really want like the 22 inch tires on this thing. I don't want the 19 or the 20. And I want like the nice, you know, black rims too. Can we do that? And being able to like that process and come back to me and said, you could do that, but we'd have to extend credit or your interest rate's going to be higher.
Right.
Like that to me is like nirvana for me. Like I can't wait to get there and have that two-way conversation with whatever the intelligence is to help enrich and improve my life.
But if I may continue that and push back and ask you a question, like what if that's happening with every company you've ever given data to? Like now it's spam, right? Like how do you think, and like, how would you hypothesize you weed out the noise? Because every company, once this is available, every company's going to do this to drive sales.
Sure.
So I guess I'm curious, like we can just hypothesize on what control a customer would have there.
Yeah, right. Like the price point should be where like, you know, the big companies of the world would only be able to bring this on, like any kind of new technology. Mm-hmm. Right? At some point, that price point comes down enough where you've got your mid-market businesses coming. I'm hoping that it's a way that like I can unsubscribe, right? Like you can't use my data because you're spamming, right? Or I only want to give my data to these five companies because I feel like they are the five that actually do something for me.
Yeah.
Much a little bit like Europe is doing with, you know, your control of your own data and what you can or cannot use. I think on some level, there's got to be some consortium that comes together and says, okay, here's how you can use people's data. And you could either abuse it and people will cut you off, or you can enrich people's lives and actually help them. You know, maybe I make more money because, you know, the car that's been sitting in the driveway that we pay, you know, too much for at this point, you know, can go out and actually go pick people up at some point, right? And actually earn money for me. And I can have that conversational AI kind of help direct that for me too. I think it's a cost thing, but I think that will come down, and you should be able to turn that off though too.
Yeah, no. So that's such an interesting thing, because now I'm coming full circle back to your original conversation about rehumanization.
Yeah.
If I knew, as a salesperson, if I knew you wanted Pipestream to give you that type of conversation, I'm not going to have the robot do it. I'm going to call you. So it's so interesting. It's probably at a much larger B2C kind of larger.
Yeah.
At a scalable level. But I think at a B2B level, going back to that B2B conversation, even with that technology, I still think people would probably just give you a call. Like the minute you admit that you want this level of communication from us is the minute I as a salesperson, I'm probably drooling and saying, oh, I gotta talk to this guy. I mean, that never happens. It almost never happens. But if it did, you know, I think B2B would continue to be human to human, but but the scalable sales stuff, that would be conversational AI driven. I think that's where that would end up. That's super interesting.
Yeah. So, we'll see. I mean, I don't think that's anytime soon. My guess is like, you couldn't do that with like real 6G technology, which is probably 2030 when it's more ubiquitous in the US at least. I think the real problem for me is actually we're getting our lunch eaten by, East Asian, companies in Asia. Like if you think about like Ant Financial in China, Jack Ma, right?
Unreal.
Massive. I mean,
unreal.
Like no one even uses a bank anymore.
Yeah.
It's like two payment providers in China. It's like 98 or 99% of all payments, right? It's just insane. Yeah.
It's nuts. No one has credit cards. They scan QR codes.
Yeah. And I think I think Jack Ma wants to do that stuff in the US too, but
of course,
I think it has to come here. That technology creates way too many seamless experiences not to start to be adopted, over the next three, 5 years here.
Yeah. I mean, the minute it's allowed to be adopted, I don't even know what the limitation is, frankly, but I'm sure it's something regulatory. Yeah. The minute it's allowed it's going to be the same word of mouth. Like, why would I ever not do business this way? I mean, in the same way it was for Uber, like, why would I ever call a cab company again? That's essentially where that will go. I think obviously we want to have folks, on our homeland to probably create that technology.
yeah.
Sounds like that's where it's going. I'm impartial there, but I think that will, again, coming back to the same theme of this conversation.
Yeah.
Is it easier for the customer? Yes. Then they're going to do it. It's going to be it's so easy to adopt something when it's the easiest way to do something and it's different. It's not easy to get to the place to do that. That's right. What takes years and years of technology and research and development. But once it's there, everyone now has that level of expectation to do business that way. And and that's a lot of what we do as a business as well, is enable that for companies. So,
All right, we've gotten off track, but it's a good, interesting conversation. I hope it's driving some interesting thought for listeners. Full disclosure, I am not a client of Pipestream. The company I work for is not a client of Pipestream, but it's a really cool company. So talk to us a little bit about, the organization, what you guys are delivering in the conversational AI and automation space. And, where do you, how have you guys kind of come up the curve on that?
So back to that theme of the Ubers of the world, I always use this example. So many legacy companies got burned when these digital first companies came in and created these instant application processes on mobile apps and websites like Lemonade Insurance, right? Or, what I'm talking about. Rocket Mortgage or TurboTax, all those simple to use gamified, button-based experiences. And we saw this as a massive opportunity because essentially what was happening is at that time, this is like 5 years ago, people were just using chatbots or they were using website form and like interactive form fill and mobile app. It was mobile app, website, desktop, and chatbots, and then phone calls. But we don't really do phone calls. And then we saw that gap where, there's every company has an app and spends millions of dollars building a mobile app, but no one really downloads it or uses it. So how do we bridge that gap and bring an app-based like experience into the palm of every user that essentially is defined as the best possible digital experience this company can offer with no limitations in an omni-channel fashion so that we can meet folks, on their desktop, on their mobile, but also across Facebook Messenger or Google Business Messaging or Apple Business Chat, all these new channels that are coming into fruition. We said, let's do different than a chatbot. Let's make this a conversational experience that has app widgets built in. Things like the ability to swipe to make payments or hit buttons to schedule appointments. Look at videos to drive troubleshooting engagements, sign documents with your thumb through DocuSign integrations, all through one out of the box technology that can be stood up very quickly and delivered fast so that you can transform your business into a non-digital business, into a digital first business in a number of weeks. So we provide all the technology and the professional services experts who are folks that have done these deployments hundreds of times to stand these solutions up for clients. And bring them into the digital world. The way I would say it is, we're going to turn, Progressive Insurance into the Uber of insurance, or we're going to turn, any company you can think of into the Uber of that company. That's kind of where our sites are. And this is what people want. I mean, we already know that this is what customers expect. 9 out of 10 customers prefer to message with the business by a global consumer report analysis. And it's honestly, it's true. I mean, the last 2 years I've been here, the growth has been unbelievable especially because of the pandemic, sadly, people don't have a choice. Like they need to look to technology to be able to scale their business. And they need to figure out that synergy between human and technology to drive those efficiencies. And we're really well positioned to do that in a very low risk fashion and a very rapid fashion. Instead of, you know, the alternative is the build, it's the build versus buy discussion, yeah, right? Yeah. You can build it in-house, maybe take a year, hire a bunch of people, or you can look to a group of 100 folks that do this every day and stand up a solution out of the box that's ready to go. That's the gap that we fill in the market.
Cool.
Yeah.
I love it. People should go check out the site, PYPEstream.com. The technology you guys are putting out there and the engagement that you guys are able to create is just amazing.
Yeah.
I think the B2B use case on that stuff is depending on what kind of B2B you are, certainly is really interesting, and you can probably drive a lot of stickiness by offering it to your clients. The B2C use case for me is a total slam dunk.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, you've got to, you know, it depends on what type of B2B business you are. I think that, you've got to be investing in this technology now. It's a serious differentiator.
For sure.
All right. I always ask this question. We wrap up the show with this one. I love knowing where I just get inspired by where people get their inspiration from. I get inspired by my family. I've got little kids who like tell me the craziest stuff and ask me the craziest questions. And like, I'm always so inspired by them. And I think about like what their life will be in 50 years. Where do you get your inspiration from?
So in no order, the first thing is just because I've been in this space, I look at every website through the lens of like kind of consultant. So any e-commerce site I go to, any website at all, I'm looking at how are they engaging me? Like, why are they using this language? What are the colors? Are there things that are popping?
Yeah.
Like, obviously the goal for anyone who goes to a website for the first time is sales, right? Conversion, revenue,
yeah,
driving that traffic. That's for B2C. So I'm looking at it through the lens of, I understand the effort and time that went into this because I've been behind the scenes. No one really thinks about that, but I do. And so I look at that and say, hey, is there an opportunity for improvement here? What would that be? And sometimes I'll just shoot them a note and let them know, you know? And that's one thing I do just for inspiration, frankly. Like, yeah. And sometimes I see things that I've never even thought of before. I'm like, wow, that's really cool. And I'll just send them a note and say, hey, congratulations. That's super cool. Like, keep awesome. That up. Right. So that's the one thing I do. But the two kind of authors or thought leaders that I love are Shep Hyken, who I've mentioned before.
Yeah.
He's incredible. I'm sure everyone on the call knows him. You know, his literature is fantastic. The way he thinks about things is fantastic. If you do nothing else, follow him on Twitter because his little bits of information are refreshing throughout the day. If you check that, and then Matt Dixon, who wrote The Challenger Sale and I think The Challenger Customer, you know, he speaks about that effortless experience, and I really can't agree with it anymore, and I embody it very much. It again goes back to that litmus test of what's the path of least resistance, mm-hmm. and it's proven to be true. And I think that book is now written like 5 to 10 years ago, and it's only going to continue to be true. So. Yeah. Shep Hyken, Matt Dixon, and just personal auditing of websites, which is a very nerdy admission, but I'll say that loud.
No, what's that? I don't know who said this, but someone I read this somewhere. Great design is like a refrigerator. When it doesn't work, it stinks. Right? So, I'm with you. Like I look at everyday things, when I walk into a store, when I'm hitting a site, I actually just change up platforms to record these podcasts. The UI is just cleaner, easier to use, right. Super easy for guests as well. And I actually gave them feedback a month ago. I've just got on the platform. Like, you know what? This isn't easy for me because my old platform, I could just copy a link and send it to you. Right.
It was not easy. This is so easy.
Right. In a week, right? Their head developer emailed me and said, that was a great idea. We just put that into place. Next time you log on, it's there.
Amazing.
It's like,
that's what I'm talking about.
I'm like, that was beautiful. So I'm like, what other ideas do I have for these folks?
Now you're the head of product.
Yeah, thing. Right. Yeah, yeah. not even close. hey, Liam, it's great to have you on. Good to see you again. And you know, I'm excited to see, you know, what the future holds for Pipestream. And you know, let's chat again sometime soon.
Thanks a million, Bill.
Good to have you.
Take care.
All right. All right, everybody. That was an awesome episode. Liam DeLapp with Pipestream. Check out that company. They're doing some pretty cool stuff. So, all right,
we're out. Talk to you soon, everyone.
Thanks for listening to Be Customer Led with Bill Stakos. We are grateful to our audience for the gift of their time. Be sure to visit us at becustomerled.com for more episodes. Leave us feedback on how we're doing or tell us what you want to hear more about. Until next time, we're out.